my goodness, we have a big showdown going on, and the media is absolutely positively terrified. They're really worried. Rightly so, I guess. Rightly so, because it looks as though those justices are indeed prepared to rule in favor of Donald Trump. And that is worst case scenario, total nightmare, exactly what they've feared all along. Ask yourself this, why do they fear it so much? Anyway, we're going to get into all of that. Plus, we've been talking about who exactly might have been funding all of those protests around the country. We got a big reveal to talk about. Do the letters S-O-R-O-S sound about right to you? Quite an explosive story. We're going to get into that. And, Joe Biden doing whatever he can to try and appease the base. Appeasement is the word of the day, ladies and gentlemen. And so now women are stuck getting the lesser end of that thing, and except in Florida, because he's out there saying, I am going to make these massive executive changes to Title IX. And Ron DeSantis is not having it. Welcome to the show. Happy Friday. I'm Trish Regan. This is Trish Regan's show. We begin today on the media freakout. The media is absolutely positively terrified. They are so worried that Donald Trump is actually going to get the immunity that I would argue he kind of deserves and needs, and basically every president probably deserves and needs. But they're just, you know, one headline after another. We've got a few here I can show you in the New York Times. The New York Times is absolutely terrified, and they're putting out headlines like how a Supreme Court immunity ruling could affect Trump's election case. You see, they're really worried. They're really worried that they're going to come back and say, you know what? He's got immunity. So bye-bye, Jack Smith. Bye-bye, Fannie Willis. Bye-bye, Arizona people that are doing what they're doing in Arizona right now. And, it could put everything, even with the Stormy Daniels stuff, into jeopardy. So they're terrified. This is one headline. Let me share with you another headline that just came out. This, again, in the New York Times. Conservative justices make unexpected argument over Trump's immunity. Thursday's Supreme Court hearing was memorable for its discussion of coups, assassinations, and interments, but very little about Donald Trump's conduct. So they're setting the stage here. They're setting the stage, I would argue, for total anarchy, because the idea here is if you're part of the media, if you're part of the left, you're not going to believe what the Supreme Court does, because the Supreme Court is somehow inherently, in their view, if they don't vote the way they want them to vote, corrupt. Just listen to Harvard Law professor Larry Tribe on the issue, speaking on MSNBC.
Joining me now, I'm so glad we have a new guest, Professor Emeritus, I guess, Lawrence Tribe, who has taught constitutional law at Harvard for 5 decades. Professor Tribe, thank you very much.
Good to be with you, Andrea.
And especially propitious right now with this trial going on and with the Supreme Court argument. So let's look at the big picture. How significant do you think the case is right now before I ask you more about the Supreme Court?
Well, it's really a pair of cases. The case that's going on now is very significant because it's not just about hush money. It's about a plot to become president of the United States by influencing people to hide information and committing crimes in order to hide information that Donald Trump thought might prevent him from winning the election. And now we have bookends. The Supreme Court argument is about steps that Donald Trump took while president, after losing the election to Joe Biden, to remain in power. And the two cases go together. The case that the Supreme Court is considering is one in which it's extremely important that there be a trial with a verdict one way or the other before the American people decide whether Donald Trump should become president again. And what we heard in the Supreme Court yesterday makes it almost certain that there won't be such a trial. The court has gone along with the Trump strategy of delay, 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 and that's shameful. The court is not performing its function of protecting democracy and the American people.
Do you believe that the court should have been more open to the prosecution's original argument that there is no sweeping immunity, because they certainly came down on a number of the justices very clearly came down on the side of, including some of the liberals, that there should be some limited immunity, some immunity for official versus a truly personal, you know, personal acts. And in likely remanding that to the lower court, to the district court, this could take months to decide what's official, what's personal, more hearings, more appeals.
And it's the wrong question. I mean, that's really the irony. The special counsel in pages 46 to 47 of his brief listed a number of obviously private acts, acts that involve the president, the former president's dealings with Rudy Giuliani and others to get fake electors and so on. They round out the picture, and Justice Barrett in particular made clear in her questioning of John Sauer, counsel for Donald Trump, that there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents prosecuting the president for those private acts. But when it comes to the pressure he put on the vice president and his communications to Congress, there seems to be a view on the part of four justices. We don't know if it's five, but there seems to be a view on the part of four justices that that information either can only be used as evidence to round out the picture or can't be used at all. And as Mr. Dreeben, who represented the special counsel, made clear, that turns the Constitution upside down. What made Donald Trump's actions at the end of his presidency so dangerous, and indeed the most serious of possible crimes against the Constitution, is that he was using the powers of the presidency, his power to lean on Congress and other powers, in order to violate the Constitution's provisions for ending the term when you lose the election. It's the hallmark of emperors and dictators and kings and monarchs that they don't have to listen to the people when the people have told them to go. And
okay, forgive me. I've heard enough.
The crime.
Right? Because this is their argument. All right. Sorry, guys. I mean, you can go watch MSNBC if you want to see the whole thing. But sort of the headline from here is that he is, well, saying, and I'll just quote it for you, the Supreme Court is not performing its function of protecting democracy and the American people. In other words, bad Supreme Court, because their view, and this is the prosecution's view, Jack Smith's view, is that Donald Trump was out there trying to steal the election. Well, the view of Donald Trump and his lawyers is that actually he was trying to save the whole process by saying, let's make sure that we actually have the proper counting of those votes, et cetera, et cetera. And that in that sense, you're turning it on its head, right? Because two very, very different views. And the danger with all of this, let me just be perfectly clear, is that it can be so highly politicized. I mean, how can a president do anything and not be at risk for being sued criminally, civilly, everything, right? After the fact, there's the point that Mike Davis, who is a former clerk at the Supreme Court, was just making yesterday on his Twitter feed, and I brought that up with you guys, and he was saying effectively that, hey, Obama could be gone after because Obama mistakenly killed two Americans in a drone attack when trying to go after some people in Syria. And so those American families could have gone after him and said, hey, you know what? That was effectively the murder of these individuals. And so you can see how it just could kind of spiral out of control. And anything that somebody didn't like, you could go after the president for anything and everything. I mean, if you wanted to, you could say, all right, well, you gave money to Israel or you gave money to Ukraine. And, you know, these people died as a result of this. I mean, it's just actually really impossible to say you can go after the president for all these various crimes. Now, like on a personal level, sure. Like if he decides he's going to knock off a family member, you've got a whole different thing. But that's not really what we're talking about here. I mean, it's really not. They may have to carve it out, but I have a feeling when they carve it out, they're going to say that he's protected for things like what we saw actually transpire. Let me share with you something. This is an interesting discussion here from Clarence Thomas. Let's listen to this judge, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, talking with the lawyers. Here we go.
Over in not so distant past, the presidents or certain presidents have engaged in various activity, coups or operations like Operation Mongoose when I was a teenager, and yet there were no prosecutions. Why? If what you're saying is right, it would seem that that would have been ripe for criminal prosecution of someone.
So, Justice Thomas, I think this is a central question. The reason why there have not been prior criminal prosecutions is that there were not crimes.
Okay, so who's determining that there was a crime? Don't we actually have to get some kind of verdict that says there was a crime? I mean, that's really, I mean, I don't see where the crime really is. I mean, this is what they're trying. This is what's playing out in New York City as we speak, right? They're trying to say that this is a crime, that this quote unquote hush money, the NDA, et cetera, with Stormy Daniels was illegal because somehow this was a campaign finance fraud. I mean, it's really sort of bizarre. Really, really bizarre, convoluted. But hey, you know, you get a jury in New York City that wants to convict him of anything, it could happen. And I think you're going to wait and see what the appellate court says. It's the same thing like on the civil end, right? We're gonna charge you $500 million, effectively a half a billion dollars, because we don't like the valuation you gave to your property, Mar-a-Lago, when you did that deal with Deutsche Bank. To get a better price on the loan. I mean, that's according to Letitia James. We're supposed to take her word on the valuation of a property as opposed to the owner and the bank's word. In other words, Deutsche Bank made an educated decision and did its due diligence and decided that whatever Trump was saying, his property was worth. They were willing to take that risk, whether they believed it or not. They were willing to take the risk. They got paid back in full. And yet Letitia James is going after him for a half a billion dollars. And then when they finally settled on $175 million, what did she do? She wasn't even going to take that. She got shot down fast, because she wanted his property. She's trying to go after everything he's ever earned. I mean, this is wacky, wild stuff. And frankly, you look at it and you say, this is not who we are as a nation. It is not who we want to be as a nation. And yet the corruption, in my view, right? You want to talk corruption. Think about the dossier that was bought and paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, courtesy of her law firm. That's how they wash it, right? Which then hired this investigative reporting unit to dig up all that junk, which turned out to be totally untrue. I mean, that kind of seems pretty fraudulent, but I don't see everybody out in court over that one. I mean, they ought to be worried. They ought to be worried. I think they are worried. You know, he threatened once before to take Hillary to task for her emails. Remember the debate? He did. I talked to him about it. Some of you have heard this story before, but I talked to him about it. I'm like, so why didn't you? And he said, you know, Trish, like, it's still America, right? We don't go and like throw politicians in jail. So part of what he was doing was a little bit shtick, I think, on the campaign trail. He really didn't mean it, but now I'm beginning to think he might, because of what's happened to him. And you know what? He'd be well within his honestly, like, it's like payback, right? Like, what are they doing? What are they doing? And will there be retribution? They ought to be terrified of it. Here he is with my friend Greg Kelly here over on Newsmax talking about this very issue. And Greg brought up that debate. Watch.
Mr. President, quick flashback to 2016, the debate in the town hall with Hillary Clinton. Take a look at this.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
I think you locked up the election with that moment, but you didn't follow through on that. Yet they are trying to put you in jail. No, my question is, you were asked about that. You said, look, these are good people. I don't want to hurt them. And I kind of thought that was a very honorable thing to say. What happens if you become president again regarding them and the rest?
Well, let me tell you, I didn't want to. I thought it would be a terrible thing. And there were opportunities, obviously, and good, strong control Everything was good, but I did not want to. And I thought it would be a terrible thing for our country. They don't care. These people are radical lunatics. They don't care. And they have to be very careful with what they're doing because it comes back to bite. And you're right about it. I had plenty. I had putting her. That would have been a horrible thing to do, I thought. But they don't mind doing it. And you're talking president, not, you know, the well, look, the wife of Bill Clinton would not have been a nice thing to do. But I felt that way. I really did. I felt that way. And she was quite nasty. And by the way, to this day, she talks about the election. Nobody goes after her. They go after conservative Republicans. They go after Christians. I mean, it's going to be a lot different out there. And I tell the Republicans, and I think I'm having an impact, a big impact. I tell them, you better start fighting because, you know, you're not going to have anything left if you don't. And we have some great people. You know them. They're on your show a lot. We have some great Republicans, but they're realizing they're going to have to get tougher, and they will. It's happened.
You know, the question is, how much tougher does he get? Because you heard him. He said, you know, I just didn't think it was nice to put the wife of the former president in jail, even though she did some things that were wrong. And even though she said really bad things about me. Well, she's still saying really, like, worst things about him. And now you look at how there's been this total weaponization of government. And this is lawfare, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, they are throwing everything at him. 91 counts, including 4 criminal. And what happens? Oh, the Michigan Police Union, the largest police union in the country, comes out and endorses him. Right? Because everybody just kind of sees through this and everybody's like, enough. And the timing of it, of course, the timing of it, pretty special in and of itself, right? He's supposed to be out campaigning instead. He's stuck in New York City with his Judge Mershon and having to listen to David Pecker and all the testimony and this, that, and the other. He's not too happy. I mean, he wants to be at Mar-a-Lago with his wife. It's her birthday today, by the way. Happy birthday, Melania. Let's watch the president speaking earlier today from New York City.
I want to start by wishing my wife, Melania, a very happy birthday. It'd be nice to be with her, but I'm at a courthouse. For a rig trial. It's a rig trial. Terrible. But we're doing very well in this rig trial. Everybody knows it. Yesterday was a big day. But I do have to begin by wishing Melania happy birthday. She's in Florida. I'll be going there this evening after this case finishes up, this horrible, unconstitutional case, when it finishes up. We have a report that was just put out by House Judiciary on the District Attorney's Office. This was done by Congress. And so I guess it just came out a little while ago, a few moments ago. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't read it. But it should be interesting. I think yesterday went very well in this courthouse. It should be over. The case is over. You heard what was said, and the case should be over. But you'll have to make that determination. I think we have a judge that will never allow this case to be over in a positive way. He's highly conflicted, the most highly conflicted judge I've ever seen. And yesterday, I think in the Supreme Court having to do with immunity, I heard the argument was brilliant. I listened to it last night. I thought it was really great. I thought the judge's questions were great. And all presidents have to have immunity. It has nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing. All presidents have to have immunity if you don't have a president. Certainly not a president that the founders wanted. So we have another day of court in a freezing courthouse. It's very cold in there. For what purpose, I believe. They don't seem to be able to get the temperature up. It shouldn't be that complicated. But we have a freezing courthouse. And that's fine. That's just fine. Let them keep handing it out. There's a rigged trial. Thank you very much, everybody.
A rigged trial and perhaps really and truly election interference. I mean, think about the timing again. Why do you choose this particular time? They could have brought it earlier. Fannie Willis could have brought her stuff earlier. Everybody could have brought everything earlier. But no, they waited until now because they didn't want him to have the ability to campaign because they do not want him to become president no matter what. The media is in on it too. And now the stakes keep getting higher and higher and higher because everybody sees what happened. Everybody's watching this in real time saying, wow, you guys are really out over your skis in a huge way. In terms of this particular trial, David Pecker, who owns the company that owns National Enquirer, has been friends with Donald Trump for many years. And apparently they go way back, and Trump would feed him gossip, especially from The Apprentice, and he would print it, and they were friends. And who wouldn't want their friend to be president, right? Well, Donald Trump didn't have traditional media outlets to use. Hillary Clinton's got the whole New York Times and the Washington Post and every other outlet that she wants. Trust me. Bloomberg as well. I mean, and I've worked at these places. I've worked at Bloomberg. Like, listen, like, it's wired. It's just wired. And so the Democrats can call these places and they can get their story out. Heck, I mean, they were talking about how Tulsi Gabbard, a vet, imagine that, a military veteran, how she's just a Russian spy, right? Because she was creeping into Hillary's territory. They had to knock her off. That's one of the problems. This is why we have so many old politicians, frankly. This is why they're all so stinking old, because they kill off anybody who could possibly be successful coming up from underneath. And so you get a generation of politicians calling their friends at the New York Times and the Washington Post and anywhere else they can, MSNBC, to basically sort of squash off any competitor. Well, Donald Trump didn't have that option. And he didn't even have it within the conservative media, right? Because it's not like Fox was his friend. I can remember that first debate. I mean, he just got, well, you know, some people would say he destroyed the anchor. She would say she destroyed him. But, you know, it was certainly contentious. I would say he did not have a lot of friends, even at Fox, when he started. I remember being like, wow, I read every tax plan, because, you know, I do those things. And his is the best, like, by far the best. And everybody's like, ah, yeah, but no, he's not going to win. I mean, he did not have a lot of support. I'm just going to tell you that. He went to his friend at the National Enquirer. And what did they do? They came up with stories to knock off the competition. You know, like Ted Cruz's dad somehow was involved in the assassination of Kennedy. Now David Pecker's admitted, yep, that wasn't true. Or, you know, something about Ben Carson and one of the operations that he did and leaving a sponge. I mean, like, I don't even want to repeat the stuff because it was all just made up. Of course, you know, it's the National Enquirer, right? So you assume it's somewhat made up. Well, what's interesting is that they had this whole catch and kill thing going on too. And so for years, they would find a story. Someone would bring them a story and they would get it. And then they'd have them sign these NDAs saying you can only tell your story to us, and then they never run it. And this is what happened, apparently, with a couple of women. One woman they're not making a big thing over, but with this Stephanie Clifford, they are. But how is it illegal? I mean, that's what I keep getting back to. How is it illegal? Apparently, they're making a big stink about how he didn't do this ever before for any other politicians. Here's something that is a little excerpt on the NBC website right now I can share with you. And they're pointing out how unusual this was for the National Enquirer to ever do any favors for politicians. Pecker confirmed, it says, that while he coordinated hundreds of thousands of NDAs during his tenure at AMI, he indicated that the only one he did for a presidential candidate's campaign was for Trump. So I don't understand. It's neither here nor there. Who cares? He's friends with the guy. Yeah, the guy's running for president. He's trying to help his friend out. He thinks that the story is going to be a bad story. He wants to catch and kill it. Voila. There you go. Right. And I mean, it's unseemly. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm so disgusted with the media in general, and what they traffic in, and the gossip that they traffic in, and what they're willing to print, et cetera, et cetera. But it's still not illegal. And she signed an NDA. They're going at this issue of, okay, well, it cost $130,000. And so Michael Cohen paid the $130,000. Was he not paid back by Trump? And why didn't they put this into the campaign expense? Well, I think that there's a valid argument to be made that regardless of whether it was going to help or hurt him on the campaign side, it certainly would have hurt him on his personal life side. So they could run with that argument. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm an economic expert and a market expert, not a lawyer. But this doesn't really add up. And, you know, Dershowitz has said the same thing, and a number of legal scholars have said the same thing. Alvin Bragg didn't even want to bring this case, don't forget. Either that or he was just punting so he could wait until the final moments, as this way you made sure that Donald Trump couldn't actually be at the rallies and doing all the campaigning that he wants to do. It's really bizarre, folks. Okay. It's really, really bizarre. And if it were a crime, then why aren't they going after David Pecker? Like, how is he guiltless in all of this? They're not. He's just a witness for them. This is really bonkers. So all in all, you get a media that's terrified, terrified that Donald Trump is going to win. They're running headline after headline, almost as though they're trying to prepare us for what might come, which, you know, I have a feeling they're going to try and stack the court because they don't like that you got five conservative justices there. Going back to the New York Times, they write, while the Supreme Court did not appear to buy these sweeping claims altogether, they're talking about, you know, the conservative justices and what they're most interested in. The court's conservative justices did seem interested in the idea that presidents should enjoy some form of criminal immunity. Well, yeah. Newsflash. Otherwise, how can they do their jobs if they're worried about getting sued every 2 seconds? Over and over, they circled around the notion that presidents were probably protected from prosecution for official actions central to their jobs, but could still face charges for conduct that was private. So I suspect that Trump's lawyers would argue that what he was doing surrounding January 6th was actually central to his job, and that he was trying to protect the system, et cetera, et cetera. And then it comes down to, you know, then you're going to split hairs over that. But immunity, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't they have a certain amount of immunity? Well, they're really worried about this. I'll tell you, it's going to be interesting. I'm beginning to think that we've really broken ourselves as a country. Not we, they. They've broken us. You know, they have just been willing to go too far in too many different directions over and over. And for what? Why? Because you don't like a guy who's going to come in and shake things up and do things his way instead of your way. He's not part of the status quo. Well, Americans are sick of the status quo. The status quo is not getting us anywhere. Just look at the economy right now. It's relevant. It's relevant in all the poll data. I showed you the newest Bloomberg poll showing he is doing very well in 5 out of 6 swing states. That little honeymoon thing that Biden got after his State of the Union, gone. He's way back down again. And Biden is, I don't think he's going to make it. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do because you can't run Kamala. I don't know what they're going to do. But inflation's bad and people feel it. Take a look at this little clip on Bloomberg.
And a majority of swing state voters, Mena, see worsening economic conditions in the coming months. So that doesn't spell optimism for the Biden camp. Less than 1 in 5 respondents say they expect inflation and interest rates to be lower by the end of the year. And then more than 3/4 say that Biden is responsible for how they feel about the economy, which isn't a very good mood. And more than half said that he is very responsible.
So they hold Biden accountable. You should hold Biden accountable for inflation. I mean, the Fed has something to do with it, too. And lawmakers in Congress have something to do with it because they all spend like drunken sailors. But this president, he just doesn't understand the basic economics. It drives me nuts. I mean, not that the Fed does either. Story in the Wall Street Journal today says that Trump would like to have the Fed actually be a little bit more responsive to the president. Normally, it's always been this Chinese wall, but it's not really a Chinese wall because I actually think this Federal Reserve is very much in bed with the Treasury Secretary, which would be Janet Yellen. And Janet Yellen is obviously working for the administration. So it filters back to Jerome Powell. So they're supposed to be autonomous. They're supposed to be this Chinese wall. I don't think that's happening in the current Federal Reserve. So Trump would like to have some say over the Fed because he's a little sick of their dumb policies. I don't know if that's really going to happen, but ultimately I will just say this. Yeah, Americans blame Biden for inflation, and they should. New numbers out today, the PCE indicator, for goodness sakes. This is like the Fed's favorite measurement of inflation. That was up too, 2.8%. In other words, people thought it was going to go down a little bit. They were coming a little bit softer. Nope, it rose again, up 2.8%. It's not good, okay? This is not good. We get a lot of inflation. We got no growth. You saw the GDP print this week. No growth, a lot of inflation. What is that, ladies and gentlemen? Dun-da-da, stagflation. Thank you very much. We're right back to the 1970s and Jimmy Carter, who's a big hero for Joe Biden. He's like turned into him. Really? Carter 2.0. Carter, but worse. I heard Carter was kind of a nice guy. I don't hear that about Joe Biden. So you got that going on. And people are looking at the cost of everything, and it's way up. I mean, have you seen eggs? I love this one. Up nearly 50%. Eggs were down 3.6% under Donald Trump. And you get energy up nearly 40%. Gasoline prices up nearly 50%. They were down 2% under Donald Trump. This is a pretty striking graphic. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, thank you for listening. Everybody should go to Apple Podcasts and listen there. But what I'm showing the viewers here on YouTube, and we're live actually on Twitter and Rumble as well, is how much everything has gone up in price. I mean, airfare. I'm done. I'm trying to plan my summer vacation with the kids. We're going to go back to Ireland. And I'm looking at the airfare prices going, what has happened? What has happened? Joe Biden has happened. Thank you very much. That's what's happened. Airfare lower by nearly 14%. Now it's up 32.7%. Heck, even apparel, this one surprised me, up 13.5%. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, we have an inflation problem. Quick shout out. You know what? You're worried about inflation? I'm telling you, you got to look at our inflation protected portfolio at 76research.com because you need to protect yourself and you need to protect your investments from the inflation that's coming. We've got a great, great, great way for you to do that. 76research.com. Go there, sign up. Make sure that you go, like, there's a little place on the app or on the computer where you can go and get the pull down menu and just hit model portfolios. And one of the model portfolios that you're going to see is there's an income builder and there's an inflation protection portfolio. I encourage you to look at that inflation protection portfolio because, listen, this is not going to go away. And even if Trump comes in, it's not as though he's going to be able to flip a switch and make all this inflation go away. I think that inflation is here to stay, especially when you look at the long-term trajectory of our economic profile. I mean, we're just spending and spending and spending money that we don't have. Really and truly, money we don't have. You look at what's going on right now, and there's a total lack of willingness to do anything about it. So you got entitlement programs, you got money going overseas, and everybody's got their hand out. I mean, heck, Joe Biden wants to actually cancel all this student debt. And even though he's been told by the Supreme Court he can't, he's still going back and trying to do it. How's that going to play out? Like, how do we actually survive these massive inflationary-like moves? It's why you need to think about how you're investing. It's why you need to look at that model portfolio, the inflation-protected portfolio that's going to help you weather the storm, literally weather the storm. I'm so excited about this. Go check it out. 76research.com. Click on model portfolios. Sign up for the inflation-protected portfolio. Because these guys aren't going to help you. I'm telling you, it's a big problem. I mean, it's one of the reasons why when you see the frustration over Ukraine, regardless of how you think about this, here's what you need to know in terms of the facts. In the beginning, everybody was kind of willing and ready and able to help Ukraine. And now if you look at the Gallup poll just recently released, you see a division there. People are less enthusiastic, right? They're just kind of like, wait a second, why is this still going on? Why hasn't it ended? And their support is really eroding. And that's for a variety of reasons. I mean, one of which is inflation, right? When eggs cost 50% more, you say, wait a second, are my tax dollars going to be going over to support Ukraine? Do I really care about this? What about our border? Well, apparently Ukraine is our border. Just listen to this representative from Virginia.
Some say, well, we have to deal with our border first. The Ukrainian-Russian border is our border. It's the border dun, dun, dun.
So if you didn't know that, oh, stupid you. The reason we need to protect it is because it's our border. I mean, forget about our actual border, right? So people look at this and they see the corruption that's going on. You had to fire the defense head there in Ukraine, as well as the deputy defense head. And consequently, look at these numbers. Again, according to Gallup, we've seen a real erosion in terms of where people are coming out. Right now, 77% of Democrats actually believe that we should help Ukraine and send money. You know, it's not 100%, interestingly. I mean, there's still like quite a few people, even in the Democrat Party, that aren't fans of this. You got 45% of Republicans that are in agreement and 47% of independents. So not everybody is like in line with this. So why is it? I mean, my view is people are not willing to just roll out the red carpet for Ukraine and spend all this money because they don't feel like they really know where it's going. It feels like a big sinking hole, right? You're just putting money in. You don't trust that the Ukrainians are doing what they should with the money. You don't trust that the situation is stable enough that we're really going to win this. And it feels like it's just going to be like worse than Afghanistan all over again. But interestingly, some politicians, one being Mitch McConnell, say they know why people aren't really supporting the Ukraine effort. This is fascinating to me. Absolutely fascinating. Because he wants to blame one journalist, one single journalist. No wonder he got fired. I mean, he had Schumer against him and Mitch McConnell against him. This is unbelievable. I mean, this journalist is not even at Fox News anymore. But Mitch McConnell says the reason Americans are not backing Ukraine the way he wants them to, it's all because of Tucker Carlson. I'm like, listen, you know, Tucker's a big deal and all. But Mitch McConnell, if you knew how to do your job, that shouldn't be a factor. Like, if you could actually do your job, you'd be able to convince other members of the Senate and of the House. You'd be able to convince them that this is really well worth their doing. If you could do your job, you would be able to get on television and sell this to the American people so they understood why we were there. But you're not very good at your job. And apparently, Tucker has a point of view, and he's pretty good at communicating it. So maybe you need a little, you know, sort of tutorial, so, you know, presentation skills, whatever it takes. You got to lay out your argument and do a better job at delivering it. I mean, this is like, it's like debate, the debate club, and Tucker's winning it all day long because Mitch McConnell and everyone there that believes in this somehow doesn't know how to actually convey their message. So that's his failure, not Tucker's. You can't blame a lack of support entirely on one person. It's just bonkers to me. And yet this is what he's doing. Watch.
You've been probably one of the most ardent backers of Ukraine in the Senate here. But what took so long to get some of these other eight Republicans persuaded to your position here? Was it the overall nature of this bill and what was lost in that time period for Ukraine?
Well, that's a good question. You already know the answer. I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin. And so he had an enormous audience, which convinced a lot of rank-and-file Republicans that maybe this was a mistake. I think the former president had sort of mixed views on it. We all felt that border was a complete disaster, myself included. And Chad, you remember covering the phases we went through. First, there was an effort to make law, which requires you to deal with Democrats. And then a number of our members thought it wasn't good enough. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all. That took months to work our way through it. So we ended up doing the supplemental that was originally proposed, which dealt with not all problems. It didn't solve the border problem.
But gosh, he feels old, doesn't he? It's what I was saying earlier about the political class. I mean, they're all so darn old, and they're just killing off their young, so nobody else gets a chance. But Mitch McConnell, I'm sorry, you got bigger problems than Tucker Carlson. You know what? You got problems because you can't communicate. Heck, you got Mike Pence out there, who I just got to assume the guy was not listening to the question at all. He's like, I've interviewed him many times, and he's very highly programmed. Donald Trump will listen to the question, and his problem is he actually answers it. And that gets him in trouble, right? He actually says exactly what he's thinking, and he answers your question. But Mike Pence has his talking points, and that's all he's sticking to, and that's all. He's not going anywhere else. And so he got basically his entire political career ruined forever by Tucker Carlson. I still would not blame people's lack of enthusiasm for Ukraine on Tucker. But nonetheless, this is a winner. Remember, let's take you down memory lane to see this.
January, we'll let somebody transfer some jets.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President. Have you, I know you're running for president. You are, distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States. And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. And yet, your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks. Right. I think it's a fair question to ask, like, where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm
running
for president
down.
Of the United States.
I mean, oh my gosh. How could you ever say it's not your concern? It's not your concern to care about American cities. What the heck was going on, Mike Pence? Whoa. Listen to the question next time. Listen to the question. I'll tell you, I credit Tucker. He must have gotten him so flustered that he couldn't even think straight. Mike Pence is like, oh, I've heard that routine from you before. He didn't listen to the question. I mean, or he did, and that's really how he feels, which God help us all. Right? But that's how Americans feel. These guys feel, right? I mean, it's like, we got to do this. We're going to do this. And you have no say. They feel that you are too dumb to understand why we need. No, I'm like, you know what, guys? Sell your case. You want to do this? Sell it to the American people. You have to explain it to the American people. Because right now, they feel a lot like MTG does right now. She was firing on all cylinders when she gave her speech on this one. Listen.
You see, the United States taxpayer has already sent $113 billion to Ukraine, and a lot of that money is unaccounted for. This is a continuance of a sick business model that the American government continues. The federal government continues to fund the military-industrial complex, and this is a business model that requires Congress to continue to vote for money, to continue to fund foreign wars, and this is a business model the American people do not support. They don't support a business model built on blood and murder
war. And she's not entirely wrong. We played all of this for you yesterday, so you should go and listen to yesterday's show. If you want to hear, it's a very powerful speech that she gives. She's not wrong in that when you look at the military complex and you look at some of these big companies like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, they were kind of left for dead. These stocks were going nowhere. Rob and I over at 76 Research, 76research.com, again, a plug for that. We were looking at these numbers, and what we discovered was really prior to 2014, which was the Maiden Revolution, it's when the CIA actually put an op in there in Ukraine. These companies were like nowhere, like nobody wanted to buy them. And then all of a sudden they start going up, 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 up and away after 2014. So when MTG is talking about, gosh, you know, this is really about feeding something else. You start to wonder, you think about what happened with Iraq, for example, and you really, you know, lots of mistakes were made. Interestingly, as we talk about the Supreme Court, that's a good one, right? Could you go after Bush because he screwed up with Iraq and used faulty intelligence or maybe deliberately wanted to go in there with Cheney, et cetera, to get their mission accomplished? I mean, there's a lot of questions about if you're going to go after presidents and hold them liable for mistakes that were made or things that were happening in real time, you could really open a can of worms. But again, I just point this out because Ukraine is not a perfect scenario, but they are not doing their jobs. They are not convincing the American people. And you have to ask why that is. Don't blame Tucker. I mean, I would blame TikTok before I would blame Tucker. Thank you very much. Okay. He's one person and he's not even at Fox anymore. I want to get to what's going on. Speaking of TikTok and the money basically that's going into some of these protests and the chaos that we see happening all over college campuses right now. But before I do, thank you for all your nice compliments. Some of you guys, I think, have noticed I'm working in a new improved studio, same location, same space. but changing things up a little bit. So it's a work in progress, and you'll see it get better every single day. But I'm really excited about it. And thank you for your nice compliments. I do appreciate. Apparently, the red dress was a hit yesterday, a real hit. So thank you. I have it in like every color. Anyway, I just want to give a shout out to my friends over at Balance of Nature, because I do actually think that part of looking good is feeling good, and part of feeling good is making sure that you're taking the right vitamins, including for me specifically, making sure I get enough vitamin D, especially in the dead of winter. Thank you very much in the Northeast. Another reason Florida is a good place, right? Anyway, I take Balance of Nature every day. I take the fruits and veggies, and it's been wonderful. I mean, I really do feel outstanding, and I credit this company with it. I'm not the only one who credits them. If you go to the website, you'll see like zillions and zillions of people, individuals that are writing in saying, you know, I've been taking this and I feel great, and thank you. You can see all the testimonials there at balanceofnature.com. I encourage you to try it. I really do, because I've had such a good experience, and I want you to have that experience too. If you do try it, I'm so thrilled to partner with them, because you will get 35% off, 35% off your order. Just use discount code Trish and you'll get the extra $10 off, and you're going to get free shipping. You can call them directly, 1-800-246-8751, 1-800-246-8751, discount code Trish for Balance of Nature. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Okay, let's turn to this news story just coming to us right now. I'm seeing a headline out of Reuters right now. Apparently, the president of Columbia University, my alma mater, has just gotten a vote of confidence from the board. Don't ask me how. I mean, this is like a disaster up at Columbia. You've seen the footage. We've showed a lot of it to you here. Just awful to see. I think the Today Show, Drew, right, had a good one. Look at this. I mean, this is not just Columbia, though. They've got NYU in there and some other universities. These college campuses have just been in an uproar. They had to close down Harvard Yard to anyone who's not a Harvard student, and protesters can't go in there. They've tried to do that at Columbia, but the woman who's president there, born in Egypt, there's Columbia University. Oh, gosh, it's right outside the library there. They've got a whole, you know, Camp City, Tent City going on there also on Morningside Drive right outside Columbia there. How is this happening? They've had to stop the classes. You paid nearly $70,000 a year to go to school at Columbia, and your kid can't even go to class right now because it's not safe. Because these protesters have taken over the campus. So they were given a deadline by the president of the university. They were supposed to have been out the other night, like at midnight. And she said, if you don't leave, you're getting arrested. You're going to get kicked out of school. Nope. They said, we're not going anywhere. We're staying. And she relented. She did nothing. So they're still there. It's like Obama with Crimea, right? Telling Russia, don't you cross that line, don't you cross that. Or with Syria, red line, we got a red line, they cross it. Oh, okay, appeasement, 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 appeasement. I'd be like, you know what? You're out of school. Boom, done, presto, gone is that Ivy League degree. You don't deserve it. By the way, who would want to hire anybody from any of these schools right now? Dan Loeb, very, very well-known investor. He's actually said, New York Post had a big story on this the other day. He's like, I'm not hiring anybody from these schools. Because I don't trust them, right? A bunch of wackadoos. That's what it seems like. They've been so corrupted by this woke think, in part because of TikTok, but also in part because of these organizations that they have joined. There's one for American students to support Palestine. And this organization, woo, it's a doozy. Turns out it's funded in part by George Soros. According to the New York Post, according to the Wall Street Journal, and according to the Daily Mail, to the tune of $300,000. And this means that kids that sign up, they get a fellowship, and they can make anywhere between $2,880 and $3,660, $3,660 for quote-unquote working 8 hours a week. Who said protesting doesn't pay? Wow. So when we look at these acts that are happening, I mean, China comes to mind, TikTok comes to mind, and I guess George Soros needs to come to mind, because his foundation has given to this organization. This organization. Here's the New York Post story, okay? You've got all of these campus protests just exploding. It's the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights that's paying them. And that's the organization that has gotten money from George Soros's organization. So, you know, follow the money. I say follow the money. Look at this. So this guy who was leading the protests at Yale, where things got kind of violent, one of the students getting poked in the eye and wound up in the emergency room. And then you get the protest down at UT, University of Texas. I showed you that live just the other day as students were getting arrested. And then there was this little number out at UC Berkeley. You see, the law professor at Berkeley decided to have a dinner where people could come together and exchange ideas, you know, kind of old fashioned, like academia used to be. And so he's a law professor at the law school, invited these kids. And this woman, who again is on the payroll for the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, which, by the way, before I show you what she did, Drew, can we show them? I've got a slide from the USCPR. One of their slides, it shows exactly what they're about. They're not about reform. They're about revolution. Look at this. Our organizing practices. They're trying to encourage you to transform yourself, to transform the world. We're committed to rise up, they write, to revolution, not reform. It's pretty radical. Revolution, not reform. So one of these revolutionary people being paid by the organization, a student at UC Berkeley, decided she was going to bring revolution right there to the garden house of the law professor. Let's watch her as she takes the microphone away from his wife.
Where millions of Muslims around the world fast, not only from the we have attorneys.
Okay, you don't have to get
excuse
aggressive.
Me.
I'm not please leave our house. You are guests at our house.
This is our First Amendment right.
No, this is my house.
The National Lawyers Guild has informed us this is our First Amendment right. And they are aware of this. They are not wrong.
This is my house.
This is my house. You're no longer welcome here.
Police, you are not welcome.
Okay, you can call the police.
No, I don't.
You can call the police. I'm getting.
Please stop touching her.
Just please leave. If you don't want to be here, leave my house.
Manhandling our students.
Please leave my house if you don't want to be here. This is you're my guest in my house.
And we're leaving
for this purpose. We are talking about Ramadan and the holy month of Ramadan as Muslim students. We refuse to break our fast on the blood of Palestinian people. The UC has committed sending $2 billion
to weapons manufacturers. I have nothing to do with what the UC does.
And we're just giving a speech.
Unbelievable. Guests in their house. And yet she took the mic and started going on and on about how UC Berkeley needs to divest from Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And he's like, no, no, time and place, right? You're a guest in my house. And what was amazing is then all of the propaganda out there on social media was all about how this girl, this student, got assaulted by them, assaulted by the wife of this law professor. And there were some clarifications that were put out, for example, on Twitter, where readers were adding context saying, you know what, California actually permits the use of reasonable force to eject a trespasser who refuses to leave private property. So the event in this video is likely not an assault because, you see, the protest occurred at the dean's house, Dean Chemerinsky's private garden at a graduation party for registered student guests. So in other words, there was no reason she should have, one, done that, and two, have expected that she could have. She's not entitled to freedom of speech in the dean's house. He invited her there to a party. But you know what? She works for that organization that believes in revolution, not reform. So this revolution is happening all over college campuses right now. It's like Black Lives Matter. Right? It's very similar, like this revolutionary aspect. Those were all trained Marxists. And it's filled with hate. Consider this. I mean, I've seen some of these videos. They would just break your heart. But let's go to the headline in the New York Post that's pointing out that some of these students are actually calling for the extermination, if you would, of Jews. The, quote, final solution. They're carrying signs talking about a final solution, which was used by Hitler, the Nazi plan to exterminate all Jews. This is how crazy it's gotten, okay? And you have these revolutionary protesters out there willing to really willing to go pretty far. So answer is, you know what? Out of school. You're not going to get that law degree from Berkeley. You're not going to get that degree from Columbia. If you're intimidating other students to the point where they have to shut down the campus, you don't deserve a degree. You are threatening, frankly, the institution itself. Because no one's going to want anyone from Columbia. No one's going to want anyone from Harvard, from Yale, from Berkeley. Or you're going to have to make darn sure they were not part of any of this. Any of this. It's really, it's just gross. It's just gross. Another thing that's pretty gross. Joe Biden making a decision to put forward this idea, not just idea, he's like signing it into law that Title IX cannot discriminate against born men to compete in women's sports as women. Where are the feminists? Like, where are they? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Like, don't women care about themselves and their daughters? I'm guessing that a lot of the women that are just fine with this, they're not really athletes. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're not the athletic type. No, they're more the protesting type, right? They'll collect the $3,800 from the George Soros funded organization to go out and protest. But this LGBTQ stuff has taken on a kind of viciousness where a group that, you know, I would argue has been oppressed, like certainly has, that now they want to do the oppressing. And they're going to do the oppressing. And women, girls, are the ones that are the victims in this case. Finalized Biden Title IX regulations. Add protections for transgender students. The Biden administration Friday unveiled a final set of sweeping changes to Title IX, the federal civil rights law prohibiting sex-based discrimination at government-funded schools. You see, Title IX came into being because they were giving all the scholarships to the football players. And so, obviously, girls were not playing football. And so girls were like, hey, and women, activists for women's rights said, wait a second, this isn't fair. We need to make sure that we have money for girls' sports too. And so girls compete in their sports and they don't have the years of testosterone building. I mean, I can't believe I got to go back to biology 101, but you know what, guys? Somebody there in the administration needs to take some bio classes because men and women are born differently and they grow differently. And yes, if you have the advantage of all that testosterone for years and years and years, I don't believe girls can take these drugs. It would be kind of right illegal. The Olympics doesn't allow you to take testosterone to build up your muscles. But somehow if you decide you're playing for the other team, you are part of the other team. You are suddenly female, even though you haven't gone through with all the operations. I mean, I don't mean to be too graphic, but you know what I mean. You know, you just decide. You decide you're going to be a woman. And if you feel like a woman, you can compete as a woman. And you can get a scholarship as a woman, which takes away a scholarship from a naturally born female. I mean, this is really twisted. Quote from The Hill. They quote the education secretary, Miguel Cardona, who said these final regulations build on the legacy of Title IX by clarifying that all our nation's students can access schools that are safe, welcoming, and respectful of their rights. I'm sorry, how is it safe and welcoming? If I am a young woman and need to change in the locker room alongside someone who still has all the body parts of a man, like how is that safe and welcoming? I mean, it's bad enough changing, let's be honest. I mean, I don't like changing in some kind of group locker room, period. Like, never have, still don't, all right? Like, I need my privacy, and now I get to change in front of a man? Are you kidding me? No, Mr. Cardona, you are not protecting women. You are not protecting girls, not in any way, shape, or form, and I'm sick of the BS statements from these guys. I'm setting the record straight on this. This is not about protection for women. It's about protection of Joe Biden's behind because he's failing with his base. And his base is the LGBTQ community. There's probably more letters than I'm missing. It is the Black America, which, by the way, doesn't really support him as much as they used to. In fact, he's down 20 points. So much so that today the Wall Street Journal reported an exclusive. You see, he was planning to ban menthol cigarettes. The cigarette industry wasn't too happy. I mean, I look at it, you know, I'm kind of libertarian. You want to, like, smoke. it's not really my business. It's not great for you. I've never smoked. I have no intention of smoking ever. But, you know, you want to do that. That's sort of your thing, right? Well, he was going to ban it altogether. But you see, he's afraid to, because the black community that he needs to support him was really kind of annoyed about this. So here's the headline. In the Wall Street Journal today, Biden administration drops plan to ban menthol cigarettes. White House had been weighing health benefit of ban against angering black voters. And chicken that he is, he decided, oh, you know what? They're going to get too mad at me, so I'm not going to ban it. Even though I think it's a healthier thing to do, I'm not going to ban it. And I'm going to allow people that are born men that want to compete as females to take scholarships away from naturally born females. Because that's what my base wants. I'm going to allow this anger towards Israel to bubble up because my base does not like Israel. I am going to allow our economy to suffer, for inflation to creep in, because my base wants more stimmy checks. I'm going to allow our border to be wide open, because I think that my base wants us to have a borderless society and is altruistic enough to welcome all of these people, some, gosh, what are the numbers? 8 million into their communities. This is not a leader, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Biden has no leadership skills. None. Zero. Nada. He doesn't know what he stands for. He only stands for getting elected. It took him a long time, and he's not willing to give it up, no matter how frail he is in health. And we know he's frail. He's not willing to give it up. He's like the elderly parent with the car keys that just won't let him go. No, I'm going to keep driving, right? So what are they going to do? Who are they going to run? It can't be Kamala. She's not electable. Full stop, not electable. They've got to somehow stop Trump. They got to stop Trump via this lawfare and hope that that's the answer. Or they got to hope that maybe they just upset the American people enough that they get worn out or worried enough. I don't think any of that's going to work. And I think the polls actually show it. They're their own worst enemy, ladies and gentlemen. The Democrats doing it to themselves again. You know what? They'd be a whole lot better to just clean house, get some young blood in there, find some good new politicians that actually believe in this country. And I mean it, believe in this country. Those kids protesting, they don't believe in this country. You got youth that absolutely despises this country. How are you ever going to have a strong military if you don't have people that believe in and love America? If you tell them all day long, America is a bad place, a prejudiced place, you know, a former colonist nation. If you're stuck being ashamed of yourself and ashamed of your roots and ashamed of your country, you're never going to be able to help support that country and help grow it. You got to love America. Makes me wonder if Joe Biden ever loved America. I think he just loved himself. A lot of these people, they love themselves and they just want to get elected. And that's fundamentally wrong. I'm so glad you're here. You know, I'm going to have like a little session with some of my members coming up. Let's see, what time is it now? Around 5:30. So, you know, maybe in about 10 or 15 minutes, we'll just get that set up. So I encourage you to become a team member here on the YouTube channel. And we're going to have just a little discussion amongst ourselves, just for us. I thank you for all your support and for being here every day with me. We have just a huge tune in and we are growing so fast. I'm seeing all my favorite peeps. Mike, welcome back. Ian, welcome back. Leslie, Don, everybody. Thank you. I'm going to be over there. Just give me like, you know, 15 minutes. I have to work on the tech stuff and make sure that we do it right, because Drew's not going to be with me for that one. But I do want to talk to you and just get a chance to check in on this one-on-one basis. So I will see you there. To all the team members, thank you so much for joining me. Have a fantastic weekend. We got lots of content coming your way over the weekend. Make sure you share, you like, and you subscribe. Make sure you subscribe and you hit that bell. I'll see you soon.